Good morning. Well, at the United Nations yesterday, we expected to hear some pretty significant things from China's president and our own President Obama, and we did some bold pronouncements from Obama.
Difficulty is no excuse for complacency. Unease is no excuse for inaction. And we must not allow the perfect to become the enemy of progress.
But very few specifics. Chinese President Hu Jintao took to the podium. He said his nation will reduce emissions by a notable margin. I'm not sure what that means, and I'm here to ask Taya Smith. She's an expert on China's climate and energy policy at the Carnegie Endowment in Washington, D.C. Good morning, Taya. You join us from Washington. What does that mean, a notable margin?
Well, good morning. We are not clear right now what is meant by a notable margin. Essentially, what he said is that China will reduce the amount of carbon emitted that it uses to produce a dollar's worth of gross domestic product. And what that means is that you could have an overall rise in carbon emissions, but that the intensity of the carbon emissions would decrease for every dollar of GDP.
There was a lot of expectations about Hu Jintao's speech. I mean, the UN chief of energy said that China could come forward as a front runner on climate change, but we didn't hear any specifics about what China is going to do, and I guess many people expected some specifics. Was the speech was it still significant?
It was very significant in that it was the first time a Chinese official anywhere close to President Hu's level, and he is the highest ranked official in China, had stated that his government was focused on climate change, that they took it seriously, and that they were going to be taking actions to reduce China's carbon emissions. So he said they were going to be reducing the intensity, dollar for dollar, of GDP. But he also said they were going to increase the forest coverage by sort of close to 100 million acres and increase their use of non-fossil fuels by 15% of the power by 2020. So a lot of specifics that allow us to really take something from it for our work with Congress, but
or
it
hold
is
them
something
accountable.
Important.
Yeah, or hold them accountable. Well, one of the things that we've been talking about is this global warmth war between China and the United States, and President Obama talked about taking the lead on some renewable energy sources. We're joined by Henrik Fleischer. He's the CEO of Sargas, and you announced a demonstration project yesterday. You're actually working in conjunction with Chinese industry on a project.
Well, not quite there yet, but I mean, we have started our demo project. We are capturing 98% of the CO2 from a coal-fired power plant, and we think that all of this equipment can be made available also for the Chinese industry, which, of course, certainly is fired on coal, too.
But the big question, I mean, one of the things that China has a history of doing is reverse engineering and grabbing technology, manufacturing some of these things themselves, and then saying we don't need the product from another country. Are you worried about that?
Of course, that is a concern of many Western countries going there. But on the other hand, I think this problem is big enough so that if you go on the right footing to China, I'm sorry, it can be sorted out. And if you work with the right type of parties, as everywhere else in the world, you have to work with the right type of people.
Well, Taya was saying that we don't know what notable margin means, which is what Hu Jintao talked about yesterday. Henrik Fleischer, do you know what notable margin means? I mean, can your technology achieve a notable margin of reduction in CO2 emissions?
Yes, it can. I think that the problem for many of these leaders is that so far these technologies haven't been available. So they, too, don't even know what their margin is. But the fact is that if you want to limit to 2 degrees global warming, you need to do something with the existing coal-fired power plants throughout the world. There are more than 5,000 of them emitting more than 3 million tons per year. You need to do something with them. You need to repower them and retrofit with capture equipment. That I would call a notable margin.
So you see China, your company is based in Norway. Do you see China as a large potential market?
The Chinese are opening a coal-fired power plant almost every 5 days. China is fired on coal. America is firing coal. And yes, these markets are very large markets for companies like ours.
So, Taya, what did you take away from Hu Jintao's speech yesterday as compared with what President Obama had to say? Do you feel like these two countries are serious about moving forward and where they're actually going to be able to get some of these things passed once they get back to their home country?
Well, it's really all about the details. So what we heard from yesterday was that both of the countries are focused on climate change, are focused on the aspects of economic growth that climate change addresses or interferes with. And so now the question is, can they turn that into some details that are going to satisfy the people of both countries?
That's a big question, actually. Taya Smith, expert on China's climate and energy policy at the Carnegie Endowment in Washington, D.C. Heinrich Flescher, CEO of Sargas, thank you both for joining us. He joined us from Pittsburgh.
For the rest of the segment, we're going to talk with Andrew Revkin, who's the New York Times environmental reporter. He's here in the studio to help us explain something which may actually put the lie to the assumption that we have, first of all, that the debate over global warming is settled, number one, and number two, that global warming consists of a kind of a calm, easy, but disturbing incremental increase degree by degree in temperature around the world. In fact, climate stability is maybe a more germane issue here. Andrew Revkin, if you don't have climate stability around the world, you can't predict that spring's going to be in April. You can't predict the rainfall, so that complicates agriculture. Climate stability, the loss of climate stability, has enormous global implications.
It does, and actually another issue is the lack of predictability. That actually affects these negotiations. I just was at the UN yesterday talking with the head environment minister from India. He's their negotiator. He said, you know, we still don't know what's going to happen with the monsoon. So minor question, what's going to happen with the source of rain? That's 45% of India's GDP is dependent on rainfall, he told me. So, and we don't know. So it could get bigger, smaller, more flooding, less flooding. That creates lots of issues as well. It's the details of climate change matter way more than the long-term prognosis if you're in India or Siberia or whatever.
So it's wrong and maybe a distortion to focus on these global averages when we should really be looking at regional distortions and what that's going to mean to the global political system and the global economy there as you beep, because obviously Someone is trying to get in touch with you.
No, that's my old wake-up time. Regional
is better rather than global averages?
Well, what you're seeing now, I've been covering global warming since the 80s, and what the old question was, are we changing climate? That's an old question now. That's been answered by all these scientific authorities. That leaves the much harder questions now, which is, what do we do and where? And I've been writing a lot on .earth, my blog, and in the paper recently about the reality is that it gets a lot tougher, a lot quicker. We've had a quiescent set of hurricane seasons recently. You know, the long-term prognosis is stronger hurricanes. So some of this actually sets a backdrop for these talks. Although, as everyone was saying before, the real questions are money questions. What you didn't hear a few minutes ago in the discussion about China is who's going to pay for that new technology.
Right.
And as I've written just the last couple of days, that's the heart of this issue.
And the money doesn't necessarily chase the crisis. Bangladesh has terrible problems with flooding as a result of global warming. The president of the Maldives yesterday stood up at the United Nations, or maybe it was earlier in the week, and said, we're going underwater, folks. Somebody help us out. That's a huge issue. But also the reduction of climate stability provides an argument for anti-global warming activists who say, hey, over here it's getting colder. What are you talking about? Global warming. How does that create problems?
Oh, my God. Well, the big issue, of course, for President Obama in a setting like yesterday, and the reason there was a lot of voices of disappointment is because an American president is shackled by the reality that if you want to have a treaty, if you want the United States to get involved with a treaty, it needs 2/3 Senate approval. So, you know, the health care bill is 60 votes. This is 67 votes. So even with a strong Democratic majority, he is literally shackled by that reality. And the Indian environment minister, actually, and it's something I'll be writing for the blog later today, said, you know, India and the United States are very different than China and all these other countries. We're raucous democracies, and we're hampered by that reality. So that's going to be an issue right through December in Copenhagen.
But that's the question. Is the United States going to be able to bring something concrete to Copenhagen, or is the U.S. lack of ability to do that going to kind of pull that deal apart?
Well, what you're seeing now is the realities around what can come out of Copenhagen are settling in. There was a lot of talk 2 years ago in Bali at the last big round of these talks about a deadline for the next big grand cosmic agreement. But those who really understand this decades-long process knew that was probably unrealistic from the get-go. So in Copenhagen, you'll see more steps toward
in December.
More agreements. The big challenge will be you'll see a lot of talk like what India is doing, saying, hey, we're going to do these things domestically. We're not going to get locked in, India or China, under a treaty to any binding obligation. And Obama's people are pretty clear. They recognize in a very pragmatic way what's realistic. And they've been saying that all along.
So, Andrew Revkin, the takeaway here as we head to Copenhagen later on in the year is all climate change is local.
Yeah.
That's right. Talking about climate stability.
And Andrew response. Revkin, in response
indeed.
As well.
Andrew Revkin, New York Times environmental reporter and writer of the blog Dot Earth on the New York Times, a blog about humans and their effect on the planet. Thank you, Andrew.
Welcome.
Coming up, we're going to check in on the damage caused by flooding in the southeast. Speaking of local climate change, with 9 deaths in Georgia and Alabama. More details coming up in the hour. And also, we'll go to Capitol Hill and talk to D.C. correspondent Todd Zwillick about what Congress is doing on the war in Afghanistan. There's a surprise. That's in a few minutes.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.